Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn, host of the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is the 3 o'clock hour, and so I'm talking millionaires and money, and today, especially monopolies. I am so excited because we've got one of the country's foremost experts on monopoly power with us today. He has studied and helps governments, including the U.S. government, but also the International Monetary Fund, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, the OECD, understand what monopolies mean and how they can threaten freedom and security and prosperity. It's so timely because this week, the U.S. Department of Justice under the Biden administration filed the second monopoly case against Google, the giant, massive, huge default, if you will, search engine. That case getting underway in Virginia court. His name is Barry Lynn. He is the executive director of the Open Markets Institute, a think tank focused on exposing the dangers of monopolization. Welcome, Barry. It's really a pleasure to have you here.
It's great to be with you.
You have done some prescient calling of some economic disruptions that we've seen. You basically predicted supply chain crises, especially the most recent ones. You've got ideas about how to solve this fracture in the U.S. economy. But I want to get a little background first because, boy, it must feel like a little bit of just desserts, Barry, because this second lawsuit brought by the DOJ, of course, the Department of Justice scoring an absolutely huge and historic victory against Google just a month or two ago. But your history with Google goes back quite some way. Back in 2018, you were at the Open Markets Institute. You were criticizing Google pretty openly, and you got fired. Turns out the guy who was the chairman of Google at the time didn't like what you had to say. And did he get you fired? Is that what happened here?
Yes, I was running the Open Markets program at the New America Foundation, which is a large think tank here in D.C. And I'd actually been there for 15 years at that point. I had gotten there. I'd spent a number of years as a senior fellow. I wrote two books as a senior fellow, and then I started this program to really sort of dig into the issues of how concentration was threatening our national security, threatening our democracy, threatening our liberty, and had quite a bit of success starting from really nothing. And then one day, it was actually in 2017, the European Commission fined Google $2.7 billion for illegal activity. And we put out a little statement that said, hey, American regulators and forces should study this, learn from it, and build on it, because Google poses a number of real threats to the American economy and American democracy. And within a few hours, we knew that we had struck some kind of nerve with the folks inside. Within 2 days, we were invited to depart.
Yes. I love some corporate lingo. Very nice. They basically got you fired because you spoke the truth. And folks, this is just a little side note, little tangent side note. We're going to get back to the meat and potatoes here. What Mr. Lynn, what Barry Lynn, my guest today, was doing was using his objective expertise. He was speaking as a professional, objectively sharing with the public a real threat to a healthy capitalistic economy. He got fired for it. Now, Mr. Lynn wasn't working inside the government, but I just want to say this, folks. I am very scared of a government where the leadership is populated by personal loyalists, because if you think objectivity, independence, and getting the truth out there will result, you're fooling yourself. It's just a little tangent from me. Since that time, so that occurred back in 2017, and thanks for correcting the entities, that is what led you to start and found the Open Markets Institute. What has happened with Google? That was way back in 2017. A lot's been going on here.
Yeah, so when... That hurt them, you know, that story, that event hurt them, because you know, they expected us to kind of slink away and go hide someplace, and then they were going to come in and sort of destroy our reputation. And we ended up, we fought back, and we ended up getting that on the front page of the New York Times. And we ended up getting that. That story exploded around the world at the time. This is 7 years ago. But it really put a hurt on Google's reputation. They had spent a lot of time saying, hey, we don't do evil. We're really helpful. We work with we're in favor of open, transparent communications. And so this really put a, that put a serious hurt on their reputation. And then what has happened since then, and this is that the most important is that in 2019 and 2020, pretty much every single state in the United States got together, the attorneys general of all these states, they got together and they opened an investigation of Google. Republicans, Democrats working together. And then that investigation has led to two separate cases, both of which are now led by the Department of Justice. The feds federalized these cases. One of them was on search, this, you know, Google's search monopoly. And that's the one that the DOJ won about a month ago. And then this other one is about Google's control over what they call ad tech. And this is the technology that really controls all the most of the ads that you see on websites, on newspapers. And Google sort of has kind of consolidated absolute control over that space and really manages that whole system and taxes every part of it and manipulates every part of it and uses it to make every single newspaper that you know and love and every single publication that you know and love and depend on, make them afraid. So it's a system of control that is absolutely awesome in its nature and extent. And thank goodness we actually have a government that is now going straight at this and means to break it out and apart.
Yeah, there's so much there, Barry. Monopolies are bullies at their base. They are anti-competition engines. The less competition you have, they're information hoarders, right? They create barriers to entry. All of that is the opposite of capitalism. If you take your first micro class, capitalism, its basic structure, when it works well, is you got free and open, low transaction cost markets with perfect information. Well, that's the idea. Monopolies run counter to that on every axis. My special guest this half hour is Barry Lynn, Executive Director of the Open Markets Institute. He's written three books on monopolies. This is the thing that I don't get. Anybody who runs a business knows that the greater you sort of move towards monopoly power, the more profits you can extract. But the most fundamental of economics, and those that say that they believe in capitalism, is that we want free markets. What's going on? Like, is monopolization a bigger problem today than it was 20 years ago? And if so, why?
Yeah, so what, you know, the anti-monopoly regulatory system in the United States, it really dates to 1776. You know, it's like we want, it's a basic thing. You don't want to have people have concentrated power over you. We don't want another state to have power over us. You know, back then we didn't want Britain to have power over us, 1776. We don't want private corporations to have power over us. And so the Constitution itself, you know, the Declaration of Independence, independence from the power of another state. Constitution, the greatest anti-monopoly document ever. It's like, how do you break power to make it very difficult for any actor, and this could be a private actor, to concentrate power over or within the U.S. The U.S. political system. So this is what we've been doing, you know, from the first. And then we develop all these laws to deal with like really complicated technologies, like the telegraph and the telephone and the and the railroads. I mean, it's like this is what we've been doing for 200 years to keep our democracy and make it stronger and to allow us to use these technologies. And then what happened is in the early days of Reagan, a group of people said, "Hey, all of these laws that are aimed to protecting our liberties and protecting our democratic institutions, they're inefficient. So let's look at this whole system of law differently, and let's sort of use these laws to promote not the protection of democracy, but the promotion of productive efficiency. And they actually achieved this. They didn't change the laws, but they changed the framework by which they enforced the laws. This was in 1982 under the Reagan administration. The most radical change in American history of a fundamental regulatory system. And they achieved that. And then for 40 years, we kind of suspended our anti-monopoly laws. What we've been doing, you know, my friends and allies and I, we've been sort of reawakening people to, one, the problem of concentrated power, of concentrated control, and two, this incredibly rich history of anti-monopoly action and of anti-monopoly tools that we already have. We already have the laws sitting there. And so it's like Jonathan Cantor moving against Google, Jonathan Cantor from the Department of Justice, yep, moving against Google. He's using existing laws. The Congress has not been able to pass new laws. He doesn't need new laws. They just dusted off the old laws. That Lina Khan at the FTC, Chair Khan at the FTC, same thing, just dusting off old laws and going, oh my God, this is just as sharp as it was back in 1975, back in 1940, back in 1912. So let's use it the way we did back then. So it's a true revolution that's taking place that is undoing the Reagan revolution that got us into all of this mess.
My special guest is Barry Lynn, Executive Director of the Open Markets Institute. He's an expert on monopoly power. We're going to continue this discussion because, you know, J.D. Vance likes to act like he really is a big capitalist, but it's mostly hogwash. We'll talk with Barry about why that's so and what the differences between the Federal Trade Commission under a President Harris and Trump might look like. You're not going to want to miss that. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be back after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're in the 3 o'clock hour, so it means we're talking money. Today, specifically, monopolies, why they're really bad for democracy. My guest is Barry Lynn, Executive Director of the Open Markets Institute. He's written 3 books on this. I think reading about monopolies is incredibly interesting. It almost reads like spy novels in many ways. The book, The Informant, from back in the day, I mean, that was incredible, right? This was about the Archer Daniel Midland price-fixing scheme. I bet Barry's books are real page-turners, too. Their End of the Line, which came out in 2005, Cornered as in Markets, Cornered is the name of the book, 2010, and Liberty from All Masters, including corporate overlords, right? That book came out in 2020. Thanks so much for being here, Barry. I wanted to ask you this question. J.D. Vance talks the talk of being a capitalist and taking a hard line against monopolies, but that's a bunch of hooey, is it not? I mean, you say pretty clearly that J.D. Vance is just faking it and basically BSing the American people. Why do you say that?
You know, you have to look at not what people say, but what they do. And you have to look at who their friends are. And so what we've seen with J.D. Vance is he does what is necessary to advance the interests of J.D. Vance. And he hangs with people whose interests are not the continuation of democracy and open markets in the United States. So, if J.D. Vance were just a guy, you know, living in Columbus, Ohio, I think he could be a good, you know, a good ally for our cause. but that's not the J.D. Vance we're dealing with here. So he knows how to talk the talk, but, you know, it's like there's absolutely no reason to think that he's going to walk the walk, and a lot of reasons to think we're going to see the exact opposite.
Yeah, he is deeply concerning to me, as is President Trump, when we think about someone installing loyalists to run something like the Federal Trade Commission, which is in charge of investigating monopolies and often works hand in glove with the Federal Department of Justice to bring the sorts of cases like the two that we've seen brought successfully, or one that's been brought successfully against Google and one that just got underway today. Monopoly investigations and cases brought by the DOJ are good for consumers. They're good for the middle class. Because again, the more competition you have, you'll see price competition. Prices will come down. When you see monopolistic power, prices go up. It adds to inflation. When you think about the potential for a Kamala Harris administration versus a Donald Trump administration and what the FTC and DOJ enforcement actions might look like, what are the differences that voters can expect there between these two administrations?
Yeah, so Donald Trump, you know, he had 4 years. He actually talked a lot about a monopoly when he was running in 2016, and but then when he got into power, his people really did almost nothing. They did bring the case against Google, one of the cases against Google in October, but that was only because they were under pressure to do that from Rupert Murdoch, who hates Google. Because he thinks that Google's stealing his money.
Mm-hmm.
Because he runs the News Corp, he runs the Wall Street Journal. So that was a favor to Rupert Murdoch. But other than that, they really did nothing. Joe Biden, after he took power, turned out to be a revolutionary actor when it comes to monopoly. He overthrew intentionally, overtly, in public. He said, we are getting rid of the Reagan approach to monopoly. We're going back to the original American approach to dealing with concentrated power. And then he hired these two amazing change agents, Lena Khan to run the FTC and Jonathan Cantor to run the DOJ Antitrust Division. And they have... We are now living through the most important period of anti-monopoly enforcement in American history. This is more important than the period around Standard Oil, you know, more than 100 years ago. And so you may not always hear this in the newspapers, but it's like this is the best period, the most important period. Kamala Harris is my sense, and this is from, we got lots and lots of folks, all of the signaling that her staff is giving, all of the signaling we're getting from our friends on the inside is that not only will she continue with what Joe Biden has done, not only will she keep driving this effort forward, she's going to double down on it. That would be our bet.
Quite a stark difference. Which one of those approaches between another Donald Trump term and a potential Kamala Harris term as president will serve the middle class and consumers better, all else being equal? If nothing else changed, which one would help out the middle class more?
Oh, the middle class? I mean, there is zero doubt. I mean, it's like what they're going to do. If Kamala Harris, she's already said she's going to be focused on an opportunity economy. That means helping out small business. She's going to be breaking the concentrations of power that have driven this radical rise in the cost of rent and the cost of housing. You know, she said that. They're going to go. They're going to continue to go after the choke points that are resulting in all resulted in all this skyrocketing prices for food. I mean, It's like why are the price of food so high? It's because we only have four major groceries in America, and two of them are trying to merge right now, Kroger's and Albertsons, and most of them have local monopolies that they exploit. So it's like Harris, Vice President Harris knows exactly why the middle class has been hurting, and she intends, because she's a member of the middle class, she comes out of the middle class, she knows how people are hurting. Personally, she's gonna, she's got the tools to fix it, and by God, she's gonna do it.
What one of the things that scares me is when you have a presidential candidate effectively saying to certain corporate interests, and here big oil comes to mind, but there are certainly other corporate interests. Hey, you donate to me, you help me get elected, I'll reduce regulations. Is there not a whiff, if not a stench, coming from Donald Trump of he's going to pick those who have helped him and leave that those corporations alone, leave those monopolies alone. And if you haven't helped him, if you weren't on his side, he's going to use every agency of federal government to try to punish those corporations. Do you share that concern with me, Barry?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like we saw this a bit with Richard Nixon back in the day. He used the anti-monopoly laws to target some of his enemies. Remember, and Richard Nixon had his enemies book.
Yes, the enemies list. Yep.
Yeah. So he. Let's be honest. Donald Trump's enemies list is a lot longer than Richard Nixon's. So he has already said, he said, I'm going to use the government in every which way to punish my enemies. So that includes anti-monopoly. So
and what it doesn't include, Barry, I'm sorry, I got to jump in because we're running out of time. What it doesn't include is explicitly caring about you and me and the middle class and those that actually worry about whether or not we're going to pay for groceries. Thank you so much, Barry, my special guest on this edition of Maggie Talking Monopolies and Money and Millionaires is Barry Lynn, Executive Director of the Open Markets Institute. Where can people find out more? What's the website to go to, Barry?
Just openmarketsinstitute.org.
You can check it out there. Thank you so much, Barry. My name is Maggie Dawn, and you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to be back with Civic Media's own Terry Barr for what's local and overlooked and good in your neighborhood. Keep it locked, everybody. Your farm update is next. What's up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing? Happy Friday.
My life in the sunshine.
I hope your life has got lots of sunshine and good things.
Everybody loves the sunshine.
This Friday afternoon and for the weekend, and nothing better to ring in the weekend than with Civic Media's very own Terry Barr with What's Good, Local, and Overlooked. Welcome back, Terry. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Maggie. It's great to be back with you and Brian as well, and all the listeners, of course. And I have two bits of fun, good news to tell you about in case you hadn't heard these stories.
Go for it. I need some good news. Tell me something good.
Okay. All right. There is a woman. Her name is Julie Ann Mayday. And Julie Ann has wanted to be, or at least she thought about it ever since she was in junior high school, that, you know, I could be a model. And she's never pursued it. Julie Ann is from the Milwaukee area. It's Fashion Week in Milwaukee all week through Sunday. They have the big shows on Sunday. She finally, at the age of 60, decided, I am finally going to do this. She is going to be the head model in the Milwaukee fashion show on Sunday. And I think it's one of those that just reminds all of us, it's just never too late to try something new.
I love it. And it's not Elon Musk's mother. So that makes it even better. I don't know if you know this, Terry Barr, but Mae Musk is a model. What is this young lady's name that's going to be starring in Milwaukee Fashion Week's big show on Sunday? What's her name again?
And did you even know there was a Milwaukee Fashion Week? It's only the second one, but I guess it's been going over so well that they're already planning the third one next year.
I love it. What's her name? Go ahead.
Julie Ann Mayday. She is going to be the lead model in two shows on Sunday. These shows are happening at The Yard at Bayshore. That's in Glendale. And she will be heading the whole show up at 2 o'clock and another one at 4 o'clock. And we have mutual friends, so I know she is thrilled.
Well, would you please pass along to your mutual friends my congratulations and atta girl, because that is super cool. I have not yet been to Milwaukee's Fashion Week, but I don't think I have any plans on Sunday, so I will pop down there and check it out at Bayshore. That is so very, very cool. Be sure to give Julianne a big rousing round of applause as she takes to the runway. A couple times I went to Fashion Week when I lived in New York. And I never saw any 60-year-old models. So I'm looking forward to Milwaukee doing it a little differently. Congratulations to everybody doing that. Again, Terry mentioned that this is at Bayshore Mall at the Yard, which is the sort of central courtyard area. That's in Glendale in southeastern Wisconsin, a suburb of Milwaukee. Sounds like those things kick off at 2 p.m. Thanks, Terry. What else you got?
I know. It's so great. And to think that she's wanted to do this since she was like, 13 maybe? And she's making her dream come true at her 60 years old. So that is so wonderful. Okay, we also have the Packers finally. First home game this weekend. There's some really fun new research that just came out about Packers fans. So let me tell you about it. Okay, the fans, according to this research, and they researched this for 4 years at Samford University, which is in Alabama. Well, Packers fans come out as the number one for attendance. I think we know that because you can hardly ever get tickets, and season tickets, forget about it.
No big shock there. I love it. But continue, Terry.
Yeah. Isn't it great? Isn't it great? Okay. So 80%, now this one surprised me, 80% of Packers fans actually travel more than 50 miles to go to Lambeau Field. So people are coming from all over the place, and you know that's got to mean great loads of money for the Green Bay and Appleton area if all of those people are also staying over and going to the restaurants and all that other good stuff that goes on the side of a Packers game.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's nice that we have some quantified metrics now to prove that Packers fans are the best NFL fans. And therefore, by extension, I'll just say this, that the Packers are America's team. Not that team from Texas with the enormous stadium.
Actually, factually, correctly, it's the New England Patriots being America's team.
Stop it, Brian.
Just factually.
No,
Just ignore him. Just ignore Fancy Brian.
How about this? I've got one more for you as far as the Packers fans and going to Lambeau Field. And I know everybody, no matter where you may go to watch a game, everybody complains about the price of the concessions. And I know we've been hearing a lot about that in Madison now that the Badgers games have beer for sale. And I think what they said is the price is anywhere from the size of the beer, $8 to $11. Okay. So this isn't so bad. We're actually the eighth cheapest concessions for football teams.
Wow.
A cost of a hot dog, $6.25.
Yeah.
Price for a small beer, now they noted small, $9.50. But the most expensive is MetLife Stadium, where the Giants and the Jets play. Mm. Beer there is, on average, again, a small beer, $11, but the hot dog is $16.
Oh my gosh. So as an economist, Terry, we would explain the relationship between the cost of concessions for the Giants and the Jets to their winning percentages as a negative correlation. That is what the higher the prices at MetLife Stadium for the Giants and the Jets, the worse the Giants and the Jets do because they seem to be just abysmal. Whereas the Pack, we're roaring. I mean, so happy to hear that Jordan Love will return this season.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Did your heart just drop when he got hurt last week?
I couldn't believe it, and I thought, oh, no, this is going to be one of those seasons, and I was very hopeful. It didn't look good.
Yes. Yeah, I was.
But it's great to know that he's going to recover much faster, I think, than any of us thought possible.
I heard a fun fact about, Jordan Love going down, mostly to do with Malik Willis, who's the backup who will be starting instead.
Yep.
If you just go up and spike the football on every single down, you get a passer rating of 39. And Malik Willis's career passer rating is just barely over 39.
Okay, so So we got that to look forward to. Yeah, when Jordan Love went down, Terry, I slammed my eyes shut and refused to watch, much like I had to slam my eyes shut and refuse to watch that first debate back in June. And I hope that the Packers' fortunes change, much like the American people's, and we see a resurgence of enthusiasm and joy brought about by Jordan Love's swift return to the gridiron.
I love the comparison, Maggie. I have one more that I'm just going to throw out.
Please.
And you will understand this. Okay, so Lambeau Field in the 90s was still the older version. And I worked at a Green Bay TV station at that time. And my story on the renovation of Lambeau Field was, how many bathrooms will there be for the men and for the women?
Yes.
And you think about trying to do a story. We ended up standing outside the women's bathroom and watching the line grow and grow and grow. Then we went over to the men's bathroom, where a police officer was standing right in front of the door because he said, the women keep trying to come in the men's bathroom. Well,
to which I would have responded, yeah, get out of the way. I got to go. Let me in there. Lady coming in, just give him a little rap on the wall as you enter. No big deal.
I've personally been guilty of smuggling women into the men's restroom over and over again.
Right? Well, as we're interviewing this police officer, four women, you know, put their hand to their lip like, shh, and they sneak behind him into the bathroom. And, of course, I'm saying to him on camera, did you happen to just see who went in the bathroom?
Oh, so funny.
He did not. He totally missed it.
I love it.
But when they renovated it, they doubled up on all the women's bathrooms, so it is much better at Lambeau Field now.
Thank goodness. So I have a funny story about this. When I lived in New York, I enjoyed some New York Rangers hockey games. And one of the reasons that I really enjoyed them was not just the hockey. And New York Rangers fans are like hardcore, which is always a fun experience. I love fans who are just totally into their team and the sport. But one of the best things that I loved about it is that when you went to Rangers games, I kid you not, I went to maybe about a half dozen of them over the half dozen or so years I lived in New York City. And every single Rangers game that I went to, I could walk without standing 1 second in line directly into a ladies' room stall. But at the same time, the men were queued up at the Rangers games to get into the men's bathroom. And I would taunt them. I would literally heckle the men in line because I finally got to go cruise onto the ladies' room without waiting 1 second. The only place I've ever been able to do that, New York Rangers games, folks.
That is hilarious. Well, and it makes perfect sense.
Of course, you hear that and you're like, that checks, that computes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, Terry, thank you so much. I wanted to just share some love with you. Troy from Mount Horeb texting in from WMDX saying that he loves these Friday afternoon segments with Terry Barr. I don't know if Troy loves them as much as I do, Terry, but I know everybody out there, all of our listeners appreciate it. And so from the listeners and me and Brian, Terry, have a beautiful weekend, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
You as well. Happy weekend to everyone listening. Troy, thank you. This one's special for you, so thanks a lot.
That's Terry Bell, Civic Media's very own. She is here every week on Friday at 3:30 to share with you all and me and Brian what's good, local, and overlooked, because we need a little sunshine going into the weekend.
We
Brian.
Do need sunshine, although we've been getting plenty of sunshine. Remember how it was like flooding and raining every second of every day for, you know, months?
Yes.
We now live in a desert. Amy and I were talking about possibly...
It is so dry outside in southeastern Wisconsin.
You were going to like maybe invest in a a conversion. So if you wanted to have the Arizona lawn, we could do that and maybe start a company.
Just get rid of the grass.
Or start growing palm trees.
Something like that. I mean, the grass outside of my place, I don't know about yours, it is scorched. It is just brown, little
the whole
prickly.
Like the whole neighborhood. I live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of retirees who really like their lawn.
Really like their lawn.
And I like my lawn too. Don't get me wrong. The ones who can be home to water them still don't, because they're like, it doesn't matter. Like my garden, gone.
You can. I am watering, dumping a whole heck of a lot into my potted plants. on my urban little oasis porch, which is postage stamp size, you know, because that's what you do when you live in the city. Yeah, they're getting some TLC in the morning and the afternoons because it's been so, so very dry. You know, Terry was bringing up the NFL, and I wanted to ask you, Brian, because you and I have done some sports where heads get knocked about in our time. The NFL this year put in this new kickoff rule. We'll talk a little bit about it on the flip side. We got to take a couple of messages here. But Brian, I want to see what you think about it, and see what our listeners think about it. Better? Do you not care? Worse? Safer? Do you care about the safety, or do you just want to see like the gladiators banging it out? I don't know. What's your take on this? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. It's the last segment of the week, so get your 2 cents, nickel, dime, or quarter in. And we'll talk a little bit about the new NFL kickoff rule as we go into Friday Night Football and the rest of the weekend, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. My producer's Brian Kelly. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back after these brief messages.
If that were football standards, NFL standards, he ran for about 2,000 yards in one game.
Do what I do when I do what I do when I'm doing in the sunshine.
Personal file, 69. Offense, he was giving them the business.
People are flushing toilets 10 times, 15 times.
I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now, right away. I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm sorry now I ever went away. Every night and day I go and stay. I'm coming home, baby.
Come on home.
Coming home, baby, now.
You know I'm waiting here for you.
I'm coming home now, real soon.
You've been gone.
We're coming home.
Coming home, baby, now.
We're at least coming into the weekend. Little football, little sunshine, little Brewers, Brats, and beer. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show. I'm here for the last segment of the day with Brian, my fantastic producer. We're talking about the new NFL kickoff rule. Like, in short form, what they did is they basically make the kicking team wait, and they brought the teams closer together, so that there's less time for the team that's running at the receiving team, the kicking team, to build up ahead of speed, and there's less distance. So it's less likely to result in catastrophic brain injuries. They also think it's more likely to bring about kickoff returns, more likely to inject some excitement into the game. So those are the rationales. I'll give you my opinion. We'll ask Brian what his is, but first let's start with your opinion. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Good idea, bad idea, don't care. We've got Susan in her car. Susan, what do you think of the new NFL kickoff rule?
I don't like it. Looks more like an onside kick to me, so I don't like it.
Does it make any difference to you that it is nearly certain that fewer traumatic brain injuries will occur on the kickoffs because of it?
Well, I'm sure that, I mean, that because I'm an empathetic human being, yes, I'm guessing that's the truth. But I really haven't seen anybody running, I mean, any more returns than before at this point. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but yeah. But I don't know. To me, it was just, it looked odd. That's all.
Yeah, it does. I think. Thanks so much for listening and calling, Susan. Please drive safely out there. Have a great weekend. It does look more like an onside kick. I mean, this is more like what it looks like. I'm going to give you my take, and then I want to hear, Brian, what you think about it. the fundamental tension in football is that the thing that makes it entertaining, our reptilian brain's appeal to the game, is its violence. But it's the violence, of course, that makes the game at its base really, really dangerous. Now, I don't know if any of you have been on the sidelines of a pro football game or a sport of similar level. I have. I have a friend who is a sideline physician in the NFL. This is next level stuff. You have men that minimum 250, some nearing 400 pounds, running faster than you can ever imagine. It is scary. And I'll just say to you from my personal athletic experience, first of all, we used to listen to Rage Against the Machine to get ourselves ready for kickoff. Like, that was it. And then basically we'd like be slapping each other like, who's got first hit? Who's got, I mean, we had to like get amped up. For those of you who have never listened to the show before, I played collegiate rugby. And that was the time when it was more likely that some player would get knocked out. Like, it was the kickoffs. And I also was often the one that received the ball because there it was a good idea to have one of your bigger players, if they've got good hands and pretty quick feet, to receive the ball. I have gotten laid out a few times. It was by far the scariest moments that I've ever played in a rugby game were always the kickoffs. Also pretty satisfying. I mean, you put the big old hit on, that's a little fun. People enjoyed it. It was entertaining. Now, Brian, so I have very mixed feelings about this. I hope that it reduces the amount of brain injuries, but I do think it does lose a peg or two in the excitement factor. What are your thoughts, Brian?
Well, first off, I'd say I've met a lot of NFL players, and one of my radio co-hosts for a good year or so is a former NFL player.
Yeah.
I've never met one that walked correctly.
Yeah.
Ever. Nope. I've never met an NFL, former NFL player that walked okay afterwards, separate from brain injuries. That being said, they knew what they were getting into. They, not one of them is like, man, that sucks. Because all of them were like, it's the not taking care of afterwards. It's the, hey, you got a brain injury, good luck with that. You knew it was going to happen.
Well,
it's that attitude that bothers the heck out of me.
To play a devil's advocate for a moment, I don't know that recently, right, like as of today, football players are much more, it's they know that there is risk of CTE, right?
Yeah,
like
for
that's
sure.
Now known.
For sure.
A long time ago, basically the NFL was suppressing that information, right?
Yep.
They had brain, so the idea of consenting to play this game with full information, that actually wasn't true until the lawsuits, and you had the Players Association suing the NFL. I mean, so back in the day, I don't think there was full information. Heck, there wasn't when I was playing. I have probably had upwards of 20 concussions or so. I have been concussed on a rugby field, shook it off, and went back out to play.
Yeah, rub some dirt on it.
Right. Now, rub a little dirt on it. Like, can you breathe? Can you run? Can you sort of see all right? Is it blurry, but just around the outside's cool? There's the ball. Go hit somebody. A little different now. Kids are pulled from games. Let's see if we can at least squeeze one more caller in. Jesse from Madison, what do you think? New NFL kickoff rule, pro or con?
Yeah, you know, I think at first it felt a little weird to see something different. So yeah. At first, you know, that's my knee-jerk reaction. But when you think about it, it doesn't affect really the outcome of the game. It's not like, I got over the pitch clock thing, but it's not like putting a runner on second just because it's the 10th inning. That changes the outcome of a game. This doesn't do that. It just saves people's brains, at least some. And if you think about how the NFL is where all college football is trying to matriculate to, and all high school football, something like 2% of collegiate Division I athletes make the NFL. So think about all those people. Like, if they change it in the NFL, they can change it in college, they can change it in high school.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for, especially at the high school level. There's no doubt about that. Here's one. Why is there a kickoff? Why not just
give them the ball in the end zone. That's where you start, and
yeah.
You have to run it in.
Yeah. Go ahead. Lots of solutions here. Listen, folks, enjoy your NFL viewing if that is your bag, man. And if it's not, enjoy your weekend. Be safe out there. I'm Maggie Dawn. This has been the Friday installment of the Maggie Dawn Show. My thanks to Brian Kelly for being awesome all week and to each one of you for listening. And let's end as I always do. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. But keep it locked here because the Dom Salvia Show is up next, folks. Don't miss it.
Nobody's stronger than me.